Now, Dr. Alana Piper is a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Technology right here in Sydney, and she joins us now to chat about how psychics dominated the 20th century entertainment scene and resulted in a massive police sting operation. Dr. Piper, thanks so much for joining me here on 2SER.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steph.
No problem. Now, tell me about these historical events. Like, what was going on in Australia in the early 1900s that caused sort of this interest in fortune telling?
I think there were a couple of sort of impetuses. Fortune telling was sort of enjoying a renewed popularity in Australia as well as other Western nations in the early 1900s. You had had an increase in the sort of spiritualist movement during the late 19th century that developed this sort of penchant for seances and the idea of spirit guides. And so also, you know, as Australia specifically, you know, it's our moment of federation. We're becoming a new nation. It's the start of a new century. I think people were really curious about the future and what it would bring. And so you see this explosion of fortune tellers. Fortune telling is described in papers as being the latest craze, the mania, all the society hostesses. If you wanted to have a cool party in the early 1900s, you had to secure a fortune teller as your entertainer. So it becomes this really sort of popular activity, although not liked by everyone.
Yeah, right. And did it have anything to do with religion at the time? And perhaps, I mean, I guess for a long time, you know, especially in the early years, sort of very dominated by religion compared to now. Was this perhaps a sort of a move away from religion and looking into other sort of worlds of spirituality?
Yeah, I think it has an interesting relationship to religion in that it's often seen as being a sort of spiritual practice, but perhaps not a religion in of itself. Some fortune tellers certainly did sort of see it as falling within a sort of religious tradition and might start their seances or start their sessions by sort of singing hymns or reading elements of scripture. But, you know, for others, it was much more like the sort of experience of fortune telling that we might be familiar with today, that, women operating out of market stalls with tarot cards or playing cards to predict futures or read palms tell people their astrological charts. So, you know, a whole different range of sort of fortune-telling practices were going on that I think meant different things to different people.
Now, tell us a bit about, I guess it was with such popularity, any sort of phase like this turns itself into a bit of an industry. Was it lucrative? Were these psychics sort of exploiting this and making a bit of money in the early 20th century?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was an affordable entertainment for the most part. Rates for getting your fortune told in the 1900s varied from sort of, you know, sixpence for one hand reading up to sort of, you know, 2 shillings, 6 cents. But because it was so popular, there was lots of articles and discussions about women who were making absolute fortunes at the trade from fortune telling. And one in particular here in Sydney, Mary Scales, was able to make a massive amount of money at the trade, which sort of then led to very contentious cases over her and her husband's will because of the amount of property around Sydney that they were able to accrue from her fortune-telling business in their lifetimes. It was remunerative, and that was particularly important because it was largely women who were working in occupation, and there weren't many well-paid employment opportunities, economic opportunities for women in this period, of course. So a lot of the people who were involved in fortune telling at this time were women who had to find some ways of supporting themselves and their families, a lot of women who their husbands had either died or deserted them. And so they didn't have a male breadwinner to support them. And so fortune telling was something that they could turn to support themselves and their families.
There you go. And I mean, it was a bit of an anti-establishment thing. Why were there sort of laws and why was fortune telling forbid at this point in history?
Yeah. So we had inherited these laws from England when we were established as a British colony, that under sort of vagrancy provisions, it was established as a summary offence, meaning it was seen as a minor offence. In England, they had these laws because a lot of the people who practiced fortune telling were seen as vagrants. It was something that was associated with the Romani people. And so it was a way of policing people who were seen as nuisances to the community back in England. Of course, you know, coming out to Australia, we're in a different context. And really, although these fortune-telling provisions were on the books across the 19th century, you only really start to see these severe police crackdowns against it in the 1900s as it becomes more popular. As it becomes more popular, the police and the public start to take notice and say, you know, why isn't something being done? This is technically a crime and should be prosecuted. But there were problems to doing that.
Yeah, right. Okay. And, I mean, eventually this sort of popularity and this craze of fortune-telling began to decline. Is there any reason as to why that occurred?
So, with the decline in popularity, fortune telling sort of reaches its pinnacle in popularity really during the First World War, for understandable reasons. It's a time of great uncertainty. A lot of people have relatives fighting overseas and they don't know what's happened to them. And so it's the peak of popularity of fortune telling that a lot of people are wanting information about the future and what's going on. And it's also the peak of police crackdowns against fortune telling, that it, you know, even before this, it was sort of talked about as a form of fraud, and there was concerns that we needed to prosecute this to protect people who are handing over their money to fortune tellers and being defrauded. But that increases a lot during the First World War because there's a lot of sentiment that it's the mothers and the wives of soldiers who are shelling out, you know, hard-earned money to these fortune tellers. And so there needs to be more police crackdowns, which there were, particularly in 1917. And so there's sort of this peak in popularity and also peak in repression. And then fortune telling does continue across the 1920s, but it's not as popular. I think part of that is that we see other forms of entertainment coming through in terms of cinema, in terms of dance halls, sort of, you know, 1920s flap era. There's all these sorts of new modern forms of entertainment that fortune telling is then competing against. It had a bit of a renewed revival during the Second World War for similar reasons as the First World War. So, you know, it's a story of sort of waxing and waning popularity, really.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think, you know, it's one of these things. It's funny when you think about the history of Sydney, to when you walk around a place like the Rocks or something like that, and thinking about these fortune tellers out there, and just sort of brings you back to a different time. If people want to find out more about this type of history here in Sydney, where can they find it?
So I've actually done a podcast episode. The podcast is called History Lab, and the episode is Season 3, Episode 2, Making a Fortune. And in that I go into a lot more detail about the history of fortune telling and also specifically the story of Mary Scales, that terrific Sydney fortune teller that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, fantastic. All right, Alana, this is fascinating stuff and I'm keen to check out that podcast and learn a bit more about it, just to sort of delve into this interesting, magical period of history. That's all we have time for this morning. Thank you so much for joining me here on The Daily.
Thanks, Jeff.